Hi there, I'm Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor Podcast. I've asked today's guest to come on today to inspire you. Whether you have skin or other health challenges, or you're looking for ways to further optimize your health, this interview is for you. He inspired me, and I think you'll be amazed by his journey and what he is doing. My guest today is Coot Blackson. He is an author, visionary, and transformational teacher offering a fresh, bold look at spiritual awareness. Born in Ghana, West Africa, Coot's multicultural upbringing as the child of a Japanese mother and an African father has spanned four different continents. His unique lineage lay the foundation for his approach to breaking down barriers and unlocking an individual's true gifts and greatness. Coot helps liberate people and get in touch with who they really are. It is a process of breaking free so that people can live, give, and share the truest expression of their selves. So I will let the interview with Coot tell the full story. Please enjoy this interview. Coot, it's so great to have you on my show. It's so great to interview you.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So I know you've got this amazing story that I think is really inspirational for people. And I think a lot of people ask the question, why are we here? And that was a big question that led you on this journey. So I want to talk about that today. And I know with my audience, I talk with them a lot about skin health and how our skin impacts our self-esteem and our level of health shows up on our skin. And I think that when we talk about, you know, our purpose and everything, it really connects into everything, and it helps us have this glow that goes more beyond skin, but it impacts our skin as well. So I'm excited to talk with you about all of this. Let's start off with your story and talk about that.
I was born in Ghana, West Africa. My father's from Ghana. My mother's Japanese. I grew up in London, so I feel like I'm from everywhere. And my first memories were two things, this deep calling to be of service, to make a difference in people's lives. So I always had this feeling that I would kind of be impacting people's lives in some way. And then my other memory was this sense of, I remember being about 7, 8 years old and being a chubby kid lost in the crowd and seeing this crippled woman crawling on the floor, and she picks up the sand that this man walks on and literally wipes on her face and stands up. So I grew up seeing miracles, blind people seeing and deaf people hearing and people throwing away crutches. This man was my father. He built 300 churches in Ghana, West Africa, and was a spiritual advisor and teacher to hundreds of thousands of people, including the president of Ghana. And so around age 8, I started speaking in his churches. Age 14, I was ordained as a minister. So my life was really, you could say, set out for me, and all these expectations of people and the community and his congregation. And that was my path. You know, he had this expectation for my life. But I knew deep down that I had a different calling. I felt deep down that I was meant to take a different path. So I was ordained at 14, even though I knew that that wasn't my destiny. And meanwhile, I'd started reading hundreds and hundreds of books from age 8 to 18. I probably read about 700-800 books on personal growth and psychology and spirituality and personal development, really trying to understand who are we and why we're here and what's the nature of this whole, what's the purpose of this whole thing, you know? And why are some people completely happy? Why are some people miserable? And I went on a quest as a young kid, and it took me about 4 years to muster up the courage to tell my father the truth, which is I didn't want to take over his congregation, take over a spiritual organization. And there was tremendous fear, and I was afraid of being outcast, and my father never speaking to me again. And so when I was 18, I had the conversation with him, and we didn't speak for many years. But I knew that if I followed his expectations for my life and the life he set out for me, I felt this sense that I was dying. I would literally die. And I could see my trajectory of death, and that I might become successful by many other people's standards. But I knew that in my own heart, in my own spirit, in my own soul, that I'd be a failure. And I believe that whenever we follow our true calling, our souls, our deepest truth, the universe really aligns to support us. And I ended up winning a green card in the lottery. which brought me to the US of all things, and this desire to come to the US because this is where all the authors and teachers I've been reading about seem to live, in California, Los Angeles, Southern California specifically, and came to LA with two suitcases, knew no one in the country, $1,000, and just showed up here when I was 18 and went and found teachers and mentors and the healers, and really just trying to understand this whole thing called life, and traveled the world, went to Israel, studied with rabbis, went to Japan, studied with Zen monks, went to Bali and Indonesia and India, and all in a quest of trying to understand life. So, and then it was really from that I tapped into something for myself, you know, a level of freedom and joy for myself that I wanted to share it with other people. And then I started coaching people, and one thing led to the next thing, led to the next thing, and the whole thing started expanding. And so now I get to travel the world and inspire people and help take people, create processes that really help people connect to their authentic selves.
Wow, what a great story. And it's very... It's similar to other people's stories in some ways, but also very different. I mean, not many of us have a healer as a father and grow up with that kind of experience. And that first memory is pretty amazing that you had that experience. But what you're talking about as, you know, somebody telling you, this is what you need to do, this is what you have to do, and not resonating with what you know your purpose here is. And being able to, even though that's so hard sometimes, to be able to honor that is, I think, really important. And I think it's something that a lot of people are afraid to do. And yeah. it does take some courage to do. But like you said, once you do make those steps to follow that path, then you know you're there because things just start to line up. And at the same time, though, you know, there is a certain amount of discomfort and pain that we need to go through in order to be on our path and to discover that. And I know I'm reading your book and I'm enjoying it. And I think it's interesting. I mean, there are a few things I want to talk to you about with your book. At first, I really love the story that you tell in the beginning of the book, and yeah. I'm enjoying reading the book. And I actually had my 14-year-old daughter, I gave it to her, and I'm like, just read the story because I think it's an important story, and I hope it's okay. You would go ahead and share that and sure. What that experience.
So
was like.
How the experience came about was I was in a place in my life where, you know, I was in my early 20s somewhere. I was in a place where I was frustrated. Nothing was working. I mean, my relationship with my girlfriend was like hell. Everything was, you know, at a standstill. And I felt like, you know what? I want to know what freedom is. I want to know what real happiness is. So I basically put everything in storage and started traveling the world. And I said, I'm not coming back to the US until I find answers for myself. It's great that Gandhi had the answers. It's great that, you know, Deepak Chopra has the answers. I want to know what happiness is. And I traveled to India. And I traveled all over, and I ended up in a little town called Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha got enlightened. And I went to sat under the Bodhi tree, and nothing happened. I met all these monks, and nothing happened. I'm like, I'm at the place of enlightenment, and nothing's happening for me. You know, I'm getting more miserable. And every day, I would see these beggars lined up outside the temple, the Mahabodhi temple, and I ignored them. And one day, I was so exhausted, I just sat, and it was like 120 degrees heat. I sat outside of the temple. For the first time, I observed these beggars. And there was one beggar that was literally sitting down. And he was the only one sitting down. He was singing. Everyone else was begging, and he was singing. And I had no idea what he was singing. But for some reason that day, it just touched my heart. And he was singing his heart out. I mean, heart. And I don't know if it's on key, off key, but it was just the purity and passion with which he was singing was so powerful. I was just enthralled, you know, and so moved. And then when I really looked at him, he was blind. He couldn't see. And I realized there he had this little bowl, and he couldn't see how much money he was being given. He couldn't see if anyone was around. And it got me thinking about myself, like, wow, all the things I do to look good, all the things I do for validation, all the things I do in my life to see if anyone is appreciating me. And he had no idea. And I thought, this is really amazing. And I realized he was out there singing every single day, 8 hours, 10 hours a day for days on end. I mean, this was his life. And then I looked more closely, and he was beating these drums, you know, with stumps because he had no arms, and he was just with like these stumps, beating the drums and sing, like he was singing some kind of like praise to his God or something, you know, and it was just ecstatic. He was ecstatic. And I thought, this guy has no arms. He can't eat by himself. He can't use the toilet by himself. It just blew my mind. And I thought, oh my God, you know, and then I saw him, he was the only beggar sitting down, and I realized he had like no legs. And that's when I just started weeping, because I thought, this guy has no eyes, no arms, no legs, and here he is praising God, praising the universe, praising life, and he has every reason to be mad and miserable. And, you know, I would quite frankly give him a pass to say, hey, you have a right to be mad at the world. It's okay. I understand. And I felt like such a beggar in that moment, that here was this man who had nothing and was giving what he had, and I had everything, and I was giving, you know, very little, and in this sense of like feeling so entitled about my life and what I wanted. And so I went up to this man and I was just weeping, and I looked in his eyes, and obviously he couldn't see me, but it felt like he was looking right through my soul. And I asked him through an interpreter, like, how is it you come out here every single day and just sing and just give and just give? I mean, someone doesn't call me back, I'm mad. You know, someone doesn't, you know, a friend doesn't respond the way I want them to, they're gone. And here this guy's just singing, just offering his love to the world. And he looked at me, obviously couldn't see, but looked right through my soul. And he basically said through the interpreter, what else is there to do? And it was the simplest, I mean, I expected some esoteric answer. It was the simplest answer. What else is there to do? And I thought, oh my God, he's like, what else is there to do? Then he kept drumming. And then he looked at me again and he said, life might give you what you want. Life may not give you what you want, but you can always give what you are. And this is what I have to give. And it just, the simplicity of what he said, the humility, the humble, it just broke my heart open. And I realized, wow, you know, to me, life isn't about getting anything. We may get stuff. We may not get stuff. Our dreams may manifest the way we want. They might not. We can't really control life. But what we can do is we can love in each moment. We can give in each moment. And ultimately, that's the freedom. And he taught me that very humbling lesson.
And so how did that change your life going forward from there?
It showed me, you know, for so long I'd been in this phase of thinking success is like what I get from the world. And if I can visualize and, you know, read books, and then I can get more and I can achieve more and create more. And I realized it shifted my perception to realizing I might get everything I thought I wanted, but at some point I'm going to be dissatisfied. And my entire perspective really shifted at a very heart level to a life of trying to like get stuff, to realizing I'm not here to get, I'm here to really give. So it shifted a lot. My life became much less dependent. So often our happiness and our level of giving and loving is often dependent on, well, if you give me something, Trevor, if you respond to me, then I'll give to you, versus, you know what, this is who I'm going to be. I am committed to being a force of love in the world. This is how I'm committed to living my life, regardless of who you are or what the world is doing. This is my commitment, and to really dare to live that regardless, you know? And so I became less, I think, dependent on things outside and people outside for who I was being in the world, and just developed a fierce commitment to love, you know? Because I figured, if this guy can do it and he has every reason to not, why not, you know? Why not? And I would say that's when life started opening up in pretty magical ways.
And so one of the things that you do is work with clients one-on-one, right? You do work with people that you take them on these trips and...
Well, yeah, I used to do a lot. I don't do as much of that now. But so out of that journey to India, I found myself literally in that state. I went straight from him a few days later, jumped on the train and ended up in literally the poorest section of India in the back of a train. And what you're referring to is I create these one-on-one journeys. But how it came about was literally from that moment, a few days after that, I found myself on the train, on the back of a train in a sardine can situation with the poorest people in the world. And I remember seeing a woman and there she was with five children and one of the kids' heads hanging off of the train. And I realized we live in a world where we can send people to the moon and we have all this technology and we can't feed people. And my heart broke feeling the suffering of humanity. And then I looked into this woman's eyes simultaneously, like a few hours later, feeling like what's looking at me is looking at her, and what's looking through my eyes and her eyes is really the same thing. And I really got in touch with the fact that at the deepest level, as a humanity, we may be different, black, white, green, orange, you know, different religions, but at the core level, we're all being lived and breathed by the same oneness, you know. And I remember feeling this profound depth of love for this woman on this train who I'd never met. And she was like, she had nothing. And I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if George Bush, if the head of Nike, the head of Google, people in leadership positions were on this train? How would it impact their consciousness and how they perceive people and life? And I thought, that would be cool. And I forgot about it. I built my coaching business to a very successful level, one-on-one. And in 2006, I had this vision to create that journey that you're talking about, which my book is based on. And it became called the Liberation Experience, where I would take one client, that was just one person, to India. I take away your passport, take away your money. You have a backpack, a pair of clothes. And I take you through a 14-day intensive, radical, experiential immersion journey throughout India. Planes, trains, automobiles, and I create a journey that is designed to strip you from all your limits and take you to the core, to the essence of who you are. You know, you sign your will in case you don't come back. You write letters to everyone in your life in case you don't come back. And ultimately, you face death, because I think so often we're so afraid of death. You know, we're often resisting death. And the reality is, I think death is really the only guarantee. Doesn't matter who you are, whether you're the most enlightened person in the world, whether you're Bill Gates, whether you're Oprah, whether you're a homeless person, we're all going to die. And none of it we take with us. And I think when we can just face death, make it our friend, realize death, I think it can inspire us to not waste time, you know, and get on with the business of living. So part of the journey is you just face your deepest fears. And that's what I got known for, at least one of the things I got known for about 7 years.
Yeah, and I think that so often we get just caught up in our day-to-day life and the modern world and our modern challenges of, you know, my internet went down. Oh my God, life is going to come to an end because I can't check my emails, you know, or something. But there's so much more to life. And so breaking it down into an experience like that, I can see how for many people or for some people that could be really life-changing and really important to do. And maybe for some people, there's no other way that they can see things differently than to go through an experience like that. And sometimes life just kind of gives us those situations. Yeah. And we didn't necessarily sign up for it, but it's amazing that people came to you and they were like, I'm signing up for this.
Yes.
That's incredible. Yes. So for those of us who can't do that kind of opportunity, that don't have that time, that or are not really ready for maybe that level of commitment, what do you suggest for people?
I mean, suggest for people, I mean, in terms of an idea or strategy, I would say, you know, so often one thing I've seen keeps people stuck, and this is more of just an idea, is we're constantly lying to ourselves. And that's what I've seen. So what I would suggest for people, I mean, there's things that they can, you know, experiences I offer, but just in terms of things that people can do in their lives, one thing I've seen that keeps people stuck is we're constantly lying to ourselves. We're constantly BSing ourselves, you know? So I would tell people to really shift your life, be willing to tell the truth to yourself about where you're at and about where you're not. Because I think many times we play this game with ourselves of like, I don't know. We play this game with ourselves of confusion. You know, oh, my relationship it's not so bad. It's okay. You know, my job, it's you know, it's bearable. And the reality is maybe it's killing our soul. You know, maybe it's so off, it's out of alignment. I think so many times we're lying to ourselves, we're rationalizing, we're settling, and we keep ourselves stuck. So I think one of the most important things is really looking, where are you lying to yourself? Where are you out of alignment? And really being willing to be ruthlessly honest with compassion with yourself about that, and ask yourself, what am I pretending to not know? And tell the truth. And I always say the truth will set you free. So many times we keep ourselves stuck by lying, by rationalizing, by pretending, by playing this game of I don't know. So that's one thing I would say for sure.
And how do we know what the truth is?
I think we often can know what it isn't, because we often can feel a certain pain. You know, maybe something just feels off or something's starting to feel like painful. And I think we have to honor that pain, you know, whether it's in a relationship, whether it's at work, that heart pain, that soul pain. And I think what we often do is we feel that pain and then we're like, I don't know if I want to feel that pain. So we often distract from it. We get ourselves busy because we're often afraid if I really let myself feel what this is, then I might have to acknowledge the truth. And if I acknowledge the truth, then I'm actually afraid of maybe what the consequences might be of maybe I have to break up. Maybe I have to leave my job. Maybe I have to leave where I'm at. Maybe I have to create a shift. And we're often afraid of what the consequences might be. So I think if we're willing to acknowledge the pain of what might be there or the inkling of misalignment and not run from it, then I think we can start going deeper to really feel what our truth is. And I think there's a part of us, if we're really honest, if we're really courageous, if we're willing to create the space, lessen the distractions, and get quiet for a moment, we know. How many times have you even, I ask people, how many times have you been in a relationship? And when it ended, one of the first things you said was, I knew something wasn't quite right. Or I knew when I met the person, something was just a little bit off. Or I knew, you know, 3 months into it or a year into it, something was off. So there's often a very subtle knowing, a subtle sensing that's deeper than the mind. I think we have to start honoring and cultivating as a knowing in our body. So I think that's one thing I would say. There's a part of us that knows, really, if we're willing to be honest and truly responsible, we know. We often don't fully align or own that knowing.
Yeah, and sometimes it seems easier just to put up with it and just go about your day and not stir up the, stir it up. And so we're settling and we're not really ready to step outside of our comfort zone. I'm a naturopathic physician. As a naturopathic physician, I'm one of the biggest things I talk to my patients about is trying to find the underlying cause of their health problems. Because when we can address the underlying issues, that's when real healing can occur. And so I remember I had this patient once who she came in to see me because she wasn't sleeping. That was her insomnia was her main thing. And I went through a full history, did a physical exam, and we looked at her lab work and she was telling me this, you know, how stressed she was and how, you know, her work and how she didn't like it, but she had to be there and she had to have this job and her family was dependent upon her and she, you know, all this stuff. And as I was talking to her, as I was doing this assessment, I'm like, there is nothing else wrong with her. There is no other reason for her to not be sleeping at night other than the stressful job. That is the underlying cause of her health problem. And normally I can find something else to tell people. But for her, I was like, I'm sorry to say this. You're probably not going to like to hear this, but the underlying cause of your issue, I really believe, is your job. And that there's nothing I can do. If you're going to stay in this job, there's not much else I can do for you. I can recommend these herbs that are going to help you relax, you can sleep. But until you get a new, until you address this, I'm not going to be able to help you. And so she wasn't real happy to hear that. And she left and she never came back. And I thought, well, I guess that's not what she wanted to hear. But the funny thing is, 6 months later, I ran into her at a Christmas party. I live in this tiny little town, Park City. Everybody, kind of knows each other. So I ran into her and she came up to me and I was like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen here. But she's like, Dr. Kates, I just want to thank you. I know I never followed up with you, but I wanted to let you know, and I've been meaning to call you and meaning to let you know, I thought about what you said and I quit my job. And my life has completely transformed. I have this new job. I'm so happy and I'm sleeping at night and all these things, So it's, sometimes it's really hard to hear it, but sometimes we've got to make a change.
Takes courage, takes real courage to tell the truth, to give up the pretend game and truly honor yourself and bring yourself into alignment. It takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
But I think when we can be honest about, even honest about, okay, I'm lying to myself, even honest about, I hate my job, but I'm afraid to leave, so I'm not going to leave. Even just that honesty, so that we're not pretending anymore. Like, oh, I don't really know what my purpose is. You know, we pretend I love it because I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know what, but we do, but we're afraid of, if I really own my purpose, then I might have to do something about it. So it's better to just say, I know what my purpose is. I'm terrified and I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm not going to leave my job. And to sit in the truth of whatever that is, I think starts burning something inside and starts a process inside, even if we don't act on it, you know? So the truth is profound.
Yeah, it's so true. So Coot, what are you working on now? You're not doing those trips anymore so much, sounds like, what are you working on now? What's up?
Well, I'm doing, you know, a lot. We're really launching the book, which I'm really excited about, and getting the book out to lots of people around the world and going on a book tour. I'll be in New York City and Montreal and Maui and a bunch of places, Washington, D.C., so I'm very excited about the book, working on some media stuff, some television stuff, seminars. Twice a year, I do an event that's inspired by Bali, where I do an event where I take 20 people, kind of inspired by the journeys to India, but to Bali. And I take 20 people and create a 12-day intensive process. And that's one of the things I'm working on too. It's called Boundless Bliss Bali. So it's inspired by the India journey. It's nonstop, but it's really about spreading love and inspiration across the planet.
Great, great. So where can people find your book and learn more about you?
Yeah, people can find out about my book at www.youaretheonebook.com. And if they go there, there's videos and there's, once they buy the book, they can receive like 5 incredible free gifts from there. They can find out about my journeys, boundlessblissbali.com. And also my direct website is cootblackson.com as well, and they can check out videos and, you know, resources and blogs and all of that good stuff.
Excellent. Okay, great. Well, thanks, Coot, so much for your interview today. And I love hearing your stories, your journey, and I hope that this is inspirational for other people. It's been inspirational for me, and I hope that it's for other people too. So thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Coot Blackson. To learn more about Coot, visit my website, thespadoctor.com. Go to the podcast page with his interview, and you'll see all the information about his book and the links to that there. Also, I invite you to join the Spa Doctor community on my website or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. If you haven't done so already, I highly recommend you get your own customized skin profile at theskinquiz.com. It's free and based upon your answers to just a few questions. It'll give you some great tips for glowing skin and vibrant health. Just go to theskinquiz.com and you'll get your own customized skin profile in just a few minutes. Also, don't miss out on the latest tips to get glowing, healthy skin on the inside and out. Be sure to follow me on Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, and Instagram, and join the conversation. Thank you, and I'll see you next time on the Spa Doctor Podcast.